What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Rip City Rundown podcast. We are recording this Tuesday, June 25th, the night before the draft, around 7:15 Pacific time. Just a couple minutes after news broke from Woj that Mikal Bridges has been traded to the New York Knicks. We're going to go into that. I mean, we can jump right off the start, and we'll go into that a little bit. We were planning on kind of last podcast, the one we posted, what was that, Sunday night? That was going to be our final podcast before the NBA draft, but we decided to do one more check-in before this draft officially gets on, because I think this is a really big night. Like, sure, it's a bad draft, but we're going to get into some more things. Like, this is a big night. I was going to come into this one without any notes. I was just going to kind of go from the heart, but went down a rabbit hole and decided I've got a lot of new thoughts, a lot of thoughts that have kind of now been fully developed. And I think I'm finally, like, I have my opinion going into the draft. It took me a month to figure out what exactly I wanted, but I got it. And if you're one of the people that are listening to this, you get to hear it. So, West, let's first talk about this trade that just happened with Mikal Bridges. Let's quickly go over and how it kind of relates back to the Blazers from last offseason, Joe Cronin specifically.
Yeah, so we don't need to get into all the details of the trade, but basically Mikal went for more first-round picks than you would have thought. And I think if we're talking about it from a Blazers fan perspective, you kind of look back at the time where Mikal Bridges was being linked to Portland, and you think to yourself, would I have wanted Joe Cronin or the franchise to give up the farm for Mikal when he probably wasn't going to re-sign anyway? So I think I'm not going to say it's a good look for Joe Cronin, because that's some S-tier level positive spin for him, but I do think that he wasn't in the wrong for not dealing for him. And I think just because a star is barely available doesn't mean that your team is in position to get him. And unfortunately, Portland is usually probably not in the better position, because you can't ever really bank on someone re-signing without like a promise beforehand, like Jeremy or something.
I think it makes sense for the most part. I think it's one of those things, yeah, it just makes sense. Like, yeah, at the time, who knows? Maybe if Mikal plays a season with Dame and the Blazers are good, then, like, he's great. He doesn't want to end up in New York, but we're at where we're at now, and we can't go on hypotheticals. And what we see is Mikal Bridges went for a ton. Probably not something the Blazers, it's worth trading for. And it's something the Blazers don't even have. We don't even have access to that many picks. So
it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Like, OG went for, what, three?
First? No. Pascal went for three. OG was the one that had no first-round picks, but they got, like, RJ, and the Knicks got lucky that they have a Canadian star that the Raptors would want.
Like, think about it. Pascal went for three firsts, and Mikal went for, like, four firsts of future unprotected swap, something. Like, it's crazy that, I mean, New York had to overpay to get the Nova boys, and that's great. Mikal, that's going to be a fun team to watch. But yeah, you can't be mad at a GM for not trading for someone when it doesn't make sense to your franchise. And I think we all knew that deep down. At least I kind of knew that. But of course, you hold out hope that a Nets GM is dumb, for example.
You hold out hope that we're dealing with a Bulls GM and you want Josh Giddey for Caruso.
You hope you're dealing with Neil Shea.
Yeah. Another interesting piece about this, and then we're done with this trade, because at the end of the day, it doesn't have much to do with Portland. There's small links to Portland. The Houston Rockets are involved in this deal too. They're sending the Nets their picks back, so the Nets will send Houston the Suns picks, because the Suns want to trade the Suns picks back to the Phoenix in hopes to get Kevin Durant. And long story short, the Rockets want to be aggressive this offseason, and they want to make a playoff push. That's an interesting thing when talking about the third overall pick, and if the Blazers possibly, like, I've seen people say that they might be interested in a Jeremy Grant, a Malcolm Brogdon, or just getting out of that pick in general. So we can go into that in a bit, or we can go ahead and go into it now.
It's a good jumping off point. Let's go.
Let's go. What do you got to say about that?
What do I got to say about that? I think that trading up for the number three pick is an interesting thought, and I was all on board for it on Sunday. Then I've discovered that it seems like Sarr is a lock to go to Washington, and I just don't know. I don't know who Portland's number one guy is, but I feel like you can get a Cody Williams or a Saloon at seven and that's you're going to draft all along. Why would you trade up to three if Saar and Reece Alshare are gone, and now you're picking between, like, I mean, unless you want to go get Klingon, which is fine. If you want to go get Klingon, then go get Klingon. Klingon's not my number one. So if I was the GM, that it just doesn't make sense. Like, I would almost rather trade up to one and get Saar, which sounds stupid. In every other draft, it's like, oh, yeah, of course you want to trade up to one. But, like, Atlanta has, like, they have no idea what to do. Like, they lucked out, and now they're, like, 99% probably going to make the wrong pick. It's just unfortunate.
I have so many ways I can go because I, like, when I tell you I have been just deep in a rabbit hole of so many different things over the past, over this past day, like, there's so many things I want to just, like, gloss over here and quickly talk about. But the very first thing I'm going to talk about is just the obvious. The only way I leave tomorrow night mad at Joe Cronin is if we draft a guard. Like, that's a genuine thing. Like, we can't do that. You sent me that. You sent me and Cody that paragraph that someone wrote. I would assume it's just someone wrote. I don't know where it was from. But they were basically like, the Blazers decided to rebuild because they couldn't win with two offensive-minded guards as their centerpieces. They've decided to redo that rebuild with offensive-minded guards as their centerpieces. So what the Blazers need in this draft is wings, defense, a little more size, a little more defense, and a little more dose of defense. There's a lot the Blazers need, but none of that includes guards. So that's the only way I will be mad going out of tomorrow night. And if we draft Zach Edey at 7. And probably 14 too, but because we like Edey. That is what I have read, and that is what I've heard. We are interested in Edey, which we can go into as well. If the Blazers trade up for anybody that's not a guard, and Edey just, I just don't think he's that good. Or I don't think he can be a guy that can be a starter for the next foreseeable future. But to get to the point, I'm rambling right now. No matter who the Blazers trade up for, if it's Reece Alshare, if it's Holland, if it's Bouzelis, if it's Saar, no matter who they take if they don't trade up for it, I am going to be like, okay, Joe Cronin, all I can do is trust you. Because you went into this rebuild, you hired Mike Schmitz, because you basically are saying, we have a better chance of getting the guys we think can win a championship in the draft than in a trade for a star. We're going to hang our hat on talent evaluation and getting guys in the draft. This is kind of, you went into this rebuild because you were confident that you could get, I'm not even going to go championship route. I'm like not going to be unrealistic here. You are confident that you can build a good team through the draft and with your talent evaluation. So I'm going to trust you to go get the guys you like. If that means it's Dalton Connect and Yves Missy, then that's who it is. I'm not going to be mad. Mm-hmm. I'm going to trust it. I can have my preferences. I can say I would rather this guy. But I know that if I'm gonna ever trust Joe Cronin and be like, you're my GM, then I just got to do it. And the draft is what the Blazers are going to hang their hat on. That's what everyone says the Blazers are best at. It's like, they're not good in free agency. They don't make a lot of trades. They get their talent through drafting. So that's where I'm at right now.
So my to come back at that quickly, my number one thing is I need both players we draft in the lottery or whoever we draft in the lottery to be at least 6'6".
Yeah, no, that's sure.
6'6". The second thing is more directed to you. You're saying you're going to trust Joe Cronin. I agree. We're going to hang our hat on evaluating talent and building through the draft, but you have to be ready to give these players, like Scoot, for example, more than 1 year before you poop on them. So that you have to accept the fact that it can take 3 years for someone to become good. Look at Simons, for example.
Here's the difference with why I'm saying it specifically for this draft. I don't think there's nothing. I probably could be not mad at Joe Cronin, but I'm not going to like congratulate Joe Cronin for drafting Scoot, specifically Scoot, because it was an overwhelmingly obvious choice. I don't know enough about these guys, and really no one knows enough in who's going to be good in this draft. So you got to trust your front office that they're going to do it right, specifically in this draft, because I do think if the Blazers are going to separate themselves from these other teams that are rebuilding, from the Charlottes of the world, from the Pistons, from the Wizards, it's in drafts like these. It's when the obvious pick isn't there. You brought in Mike Schmitz, who like you were you got so much praise for that hiring. And I think that if you're going to bring a guy like Mike Schmitz, this is the best draft for it. I know it could take time. I know it could take time, but what I'm saying is, you brought in a Mike Schmitz type guy to make the not obvious pick, to find the diamonds in the rough. So I think that it's paramount that you hit on one of your draft picks. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to be a star. That means this guy's going to be at least a, we'll say, starter quality player for in the league for, I don't know, 8 years. Doesn't mean it's with the Blazers, but basically what I'm saying is, like, this is one of those drafts, like, if you don't hit one, and again, hit is a very relative term. You can take it however you want to. I'm not saying superstar. I'm not getting unrealistic here. I'm just saying, like, good player that's going to be on your team for a while, that can be a good starter quality role player. You have to hit on one of those, because if you don't hit it this year, then you just kick the can longer and longer. That doesn't mean you have to get the star this year, but this is, like, I think I'm starting to realize, like, this draft is, this is the most important night of the Blazers offseason.
When you're a bad team, it is. Now, you're talking about kicking the can down the road. The can, when we traded Dame, got kicked 5 years down the road, just so you know. Mm-hmm. So this can that we're talking about, like, if we draft two guys and they have a scoot like rookie season, that's not kicking the can down the road. The can's already been kicked even farther, because you got to give these guys time. So I don't like, I don't want you, like, I feel like you're partly sitting here saying that because Scoot had such a bad season, and you're now putting the onus on us to get it right this year, when in reality, who knows what Scoot's going to do?
I'm not saying this in a 1 year timeline. I'm not saying, like, if we come back next year and the guys we draft in this draft are bad, then I'm going to say it's a bad draft. Now, if Shaden's bad this year, then I'm probably going to be like, ooh, that 2022 pick, Shaden's, that might not have been a good pick, because it's going to be his third year. Like, typically, if you're not good by your third year, you might not be that good. Scoot, you want to see improvement, but you don't need to be
I need to see 75 games from Sharp in a season before I judge him.
Totally. Yeah, but also you got to play 75 at some point. If you don't,
that's what I'm saying. I'm not, if he has a bad year and plays, doesn't have a great season, I'm not, I mean, he's played probably one season.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. For next year, if Sharp comes out of next year and still, like, hasn't shown that he's, like, kind of a core piece, not the centerpiece, just a core piece of the future, then we're going to have to start having conversations about Sharp being, like, actually a guy you can build around, and having conversations that, if, like, because we can say right now it's a good pick, but I'm just saying,
is Sharp on the table tomorrow night? Is Sharp on the table tomorrow night?
How would you get that from what I'm saying?
I'm just asking.
No.
Okay.
Well, it's everything's relative.
Is Sharp worth the number one pick to you?
Oh, absolutely not.
I agree.
Sharp, Scoot, probably, like, there's not a lot of guys. There are, but
would you trade Jeremy for number one?
I think I would trade Jeremy. I don't think I would trade Ayton. Any guy that you could see as a part of your future, like, that could be a starter in the future. So Anfernee, DA, the two guards, Scoot and Shaden, I should say, are off the table. But a guy like Jeremy's on the table. If you can somehow give up Melk for the first overall pick, you absolutely do it. But what I'm saying is just, like, I think I've said over this time, like, oh, if we take Dalton Connect, I'm not going to be that happy. But, like, this draft is so – there's so many ways it can go that, like, it's truly just, like, as long as you get a guy that obviously fills a position of need. Like, if you take Topic, like, there's really no way you can look at that pick and say, gosh, that's going to be good.
I don't even think you can take Castle.
Which I think we were talking about this offline. Like, that's kind of sucks. I like Castle. I think Castle can be really good. I think Castle can be really good.
Yeah, unfortunate, but it's like we said this in the first mock draft.
That's on me.
It's okay. We said this in in the first mock draft. It's a positional fit draft, and you've got to go get the guys that you think can fit into your team the best, because there are not any home run prospects in this draft. Obviously, we've hit that so many times. That doesn't mean, like, there will be all-stars in this draft. It's every draft. There will be a few. It's interesting if the Blazers draft one. That's kind of what we're asking from Schmidt here. Schmidt and Krohn.
No, yeah, it's and even one of these things, like, obviously you want to get some guys with a high upside, but if you're at 14 and you got a forward, if say you get just say you get Cody Williams, we're just throwing out that name. Say you get Cody Williams at 7. That's a guy that you can say has high upside and can be a great 3 or 4 one day. Then if you're at 14, like you don't have to swing for the fences. I wouldn't be mad if they went for a guy that's like if you draft your role players now, I think that's something that the Blazers have been not great at in the past. We've got some great guys in the draft. We've drafted a guy like We've drafted a guy like Damian Lillard. We drafted a guy like CJ McCollum who have been great players, but I think we sometimes struggle with drafting like our key role players. Like a lot of these guys, like get a Christian Braun, get a guy so you don't have to pay an Allen Crabbe $70 million. Get a guy so you don't have to like say, oh, we've got Delano Banton, he can be a part of the future. We signed Nick Stauskas to be a role player. Get your role players now, because the only other way you're going to get them is by overpaying them. So come out of here with a great role player. If that's what happens, if you get a guy that's going to be your seventh man for the next 10 years, might be a good draft.
I mean, look, it's a really a low bar to clear for me in terms of what I want from this draft. Of course, the fan in me wants to see an aggressive move where we trade up and go snag a guy. But again, it all comes down to, do we think it's worth getting this pick for this price? And we're never going to know this conversation, so we just know the end result. And so, of course, like this McHale thing, for example, we're pissed that Joe Cronin doesn't make a big move. And now we're like, wow, 6 years, or sorry, 6 firsts for, I mean, improving the roster, but not getting to the upper echelon of the conference, let alone the league. I mean, I'm sorry, but Damon McHale on the Blazers is not beating Milwaukee.
And I do think there's a fine line between not judging their rookie year and then being overly judging, like saying like it's okay if they have a bad rookie year, and then on the other hand saying we're screwed, he had a bad rookie year. You don't want to get in this cycle of it's okay, they had a bad first 2 years because they can be better, because like odds are if you're better your rookie year, you're going to be a better player. The guys that are good their rookie year are more likely better than the guys that aren't good their rookie year. So
Michael Carter Williams.
I mean, yes, there are a few examples, but I do think that I'm deciding which way to go here. There's just so many ways we can go that it's so hard, like you're saying and like I'm saying, like it's so hard to judge what they actually do. Like come our pod tomorrow night, it's going to be hard to judge and say, gosh, we missed on these picks. These are terrible picks. I'm so mad. Because, like, if we drafted Amen Thompson over Scoot Henderson last year, we would have been pissed. So you can get reactionary takes on draft night. But basically what I'm saying is, like, again, the scale for hitting is however you make it. I'm going to say my scale is you get a guy that's a part of your core seven-man rotation. I'm not going to say for the next 10 years because odds are the guy's not going to stay for the next 10 years. But you know what I'm saying?
We don't need to put a timeline on it.
Our core seven, top seven rotation guy for an NBA team, you have to get one of those. You just have to hit a pick. You got to just like when you get opportunities, it's very rare you get two lottery picks. You got two swings. You got to hit one of them.
Got two again, early like, seconds too.
Two early seconds, yeah. Like we can trade 2 seconds and 14 and get up to 9. Like there's – we're going to have our opportunities. And again, I'm not saying like you have to hit and we have to know if we're going to hit come draft night next year. Just like in the grand scheme of the Blazers over the next 10 years, we need to look back on this draft and we need to say we got one good player out of that draft.
I agree. I don't have much to add to that. It's truly a draft where you just have to make your team better, because right now this is really the only avenue you have to do that. So
you need to like stand on this, like you need to like make this your thing, like make like be the good drafting team. This is where this is truly where I think if I had to rank teams on who I think could be the best drafting teams, this is where I think the Blazers can separate themselves from these other teams, because they've clearly like in the past, Joe Cronin's been in the building for since like 2006, he's been a part of Blazers organization. He's just, he's been a part of the conversation. He wasn't the guy to make the decision, but he was a part of the conversation to draft Roy, to draft Aldridge, or to trade for Aldridge on draft night, to draft Dame, to draft CJ. So, like, the Blazers, I think, are an above-average drafting team for the most part, if not top 10 over the last two decades. So, like, you also bring in a guy like Mike Schmitz who, like, yeah, he's a great evaluator of talent. He's, but he also, this is his first time, first couple years, a part of an actual organization. So, like, take that great drafting ability, take that great talent evaluation ability, and, like, this is where you separate yourself. You find your guys. And I think, like, this is the exact type of draft where the Blazers can be far and away better than these other rebuilding teams. Because sometimes, like last year, I don't think there was anything the Blazers did that, like, Joe Cronin didn't do what, or did do exactly what all 29 other GMs would have done when it comes to drafting at the third pick. Every other GM would have taken Scoot.
Which he was right to do.
Rightfully so. Like, when it comes to what he was actually drafting. So, like, you can't get mad at him for making the pick, but you also can't necessarily be like, oh, you found some elite pick. You had a great value pick. Like, you can do that at 14-7. And I think, like, this is a great year to do it. Again, like you said, it's going to take a while to know if it was the great right pick or not, but it's a great year to do it.
Yep. And quite frankly, like you said, this is a diamond in the rough draft. So go find your diamond. And I'm more excited just about, this is probably the most excited I've been in just not knowing what's going to happen. So that's what's exciting for me.
Edie, I just want to quickly get your thoughts on Edie. If they drafted Edie at 14, what is your reaction? Is it
reaction
as if we drafted a guard?
It's better than getting a guard. And the dude's 7'4". I mean, he's 7'4". Of course, there are like very real concerns about his perimeter shooting and his perimeter defense, just anything on the perimeter, for sure. But in college, at least, I mean, the dude, like, let's not forget, like, Klingon couldn't guard him. Like, really. And Klingon might be going number one. I mean, okay, we're talking about, like, Iguodala guarded LeBron.
Yeah.
It's like one of the, like, Edie got his numbers. So I think Edie, I just think the scary thing with Edie is if you pick him, you're kind of locking yourself into a play style for a while.
How I feel.
And I don't know if it's the play style that is successful in the modern NBA. Not saying he's a bad player.
But literally the perfect way to do it. I think his ceiling is like Jonas Valanciunas.
Which is great.
Which is like, if he ended up being Jonas Valanciunas, sure, that's great. But when Jonas Valanciunas is on the floor, you have one play style you can play on offense. And that is, have one guy, you clog the paint with Jonas and
you
have to surround him with shooters or else, like, you're not successful probably.
Yeah. And I think five out's the future. Obviously, we saw Boston do it this year. I'm sure you, of course, you can win other ways, but Zach Edey just doesn't provide a lot of offensive flexibility in a league that is dominated by offense. I think defensively he'd be sick. You just would have to play drop coverage.
Yeah. Consistently. If I had to, like, rank, like, the levels of emotion I would feel with each.
I wouldn't be pissed at Edie. I would just be like, wow, we're really committing to this. I don't know how I feel about
it. It's like guard here. And I think, like, the more I'm thinking about it, like, it is so unrealistic that we draft a guard. And if we do, like, all hell will break loose from Portland Trailblazer fans. Cause that's like, that would be wild. And I don't even want to go down that road. I think that's really like a near zero possibility. Then it's a guy like Edie, especially if we draft him at 7, which has also been rumored, which is very interesting. But again, so many rumors in this draft. Just a week ago, SAR was -2,000 to go 1, and now resale share is like -300. So many things can change in the matter of weeks, and most likely in the matter of days, and now matter of hours. So
yeah.
Look, if we drafted Edie, I think that would be one where we would come on the podcast tomorrow and I would be like, why? Like, it's just, I don't like that. It's not fun. It's like, you're locking yourself into a play style. I'm not going to have a pitchfork out and be so pissed at you, Joe Cronin, because, like, at the end of the day, Edie, like, people are saying, like, Luka Garza is like Edie, but Edie definitely is better, and Edie is taller and a better defender. He's better. He can move a little better, but still, he is of that type of mold. Back to the basket centers in college basketball tend to not do great. Look at, like, Jahlil Okafor in whatever year
that was. The thing, though, is the dude is 7'4". And, like, you're talking about how many, if we draft him, how many other teams can meet Wimby at the rim?
Yeah, but...
I'm just saying.
Okay, fair. Yeah, the 7'4 thing is definitely interesting. When it comes to guys I want to draft, I would be ecstatic with Cody Williams. I'm still in on Ron Holland. Like, I still think he can be a great player. If we drafted Bouzelis, I wouldn't be mad. Something about Sarr real quick that I was kind of just diving more deep into Sarr, not just the highlights, just more like his entire just like come up as a player. And an interesting thing that you don't need to read into it deep too much, but just hear me out. He plays, signs for Real Madrid when he's like, whatever, 16, 17, 16, 15. And then as soon as Real Madrid, like he struggles a bit at Real Madrid, he goes to Overtime Elite. Then at Overtime Elite, they were saying like, he just wants to be on the perimeter. They had to basically like teach him how to go down low. Like say like, you got to go down low. This is still like 17-year-old, 18-year-old. He decides to not be like Rob Dillingham, who was also at Overtime League. He decides to not go to college. He wants to go to the NBL, but he never starts in the NBL. He's a bench guy the whole time. He never really develops the shot that much, and he only shot 48% from the paint this year, and now he doesn't want to work out for the Hawks because he kind of just wants – rumor is he wants to go to Washington because that's where he can kind of be the most free to take – to do whatever he wants and kind of like take reins of the offense. It's a very interesting thing. It's – on one hand, you can say he just wants to go to his best case scenario possible, and he's always just trying to set him up to be a high pick in the draft, and he wants to be in Washington because that's where he has the most control. But you can also look at it as kind of running from the grind and like not really wanting to ever be challenged, just kind of continue to go to the easier and easier thing. It's an interesting thing.
I don't really care about what – I'm not going to read into that. To me, it just – what I take away from that is – we're talking about a guy who shot, doesn't have a great stroke and didn't shoot that efficiently in the paint as a number one overall pick. Like, that's just where this draft is, guys. So that's, I mean, we're asking Joe Cronin to find the diamond in the rough in a Buns draft. So the word is kind of
one of those things where if Joe Cronin ends up taking Alex Sarr, he's a position of need, and I'm going to trust Joe and Mike Schmitz to, because I think like.
I develop.
It's a all you can do. All you can do. And maybe Joe Cronin's a great drafter, but we are a bad developing team. Who knows?
Who knows?
So I mean, things that go into this.
Yeah. Anything else?
No. I think let me just go in my notes real quick and make sure I said everything I want to do. Literally, I said one bullet point I made was, this is how you separate yourself. These type of drafts, you choose to rebuild, so this is the most important night of the season. Don't effing miss.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, like, you get, as the Blazers, you chose to go down this path. So, you chose to go down this path, I hope, with confidence that you were a good drafter and you could get us out of this rebuild, get us out of this just bad basketball, get us out of this hole by drafting. So, I'm going to trust that you're going to be successful at drafting. And, again, that's on a scale for this draft. But, mm-hmm. like you said, there's going to be some all-stars. There's going to be plenty of role players in this draft, and the Blazers don't come up with one of them. Then I hope by the time we know that's the case, Joe Cronin is out of here. So,
I mean, if that's what you want,
it's exactly what I want.
It's crazy.
Every draft has great players.
I agree. And
go get one of them.
That's 29 other teams are fighting for that too. So hopefully we're the ones that do it. And I'm going to be, I mean, tomorrow I'll be excited regardless if we pick, if it's a position of need, because we're not going to know the answer for a while. So I'll end with that.
All right. That's it, guys. My final prediction is Klingon's going to go one tomorrow. And I think Sarr is going to be available at 3. Do the Blazers go up for him? I don't know. That's my final prediction.
I think it's going to be Klingon at 1, Sarr at 2, and Risa Sher will go. Actually, I think Shepard's going to go 3, and Risa Sher is going to be available for someone to go get. Because you don't really want to pair Risa Sher with Wimby if you're other teams. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, you don't want to allow that to happen, but the Spurs would be loving that.
The French connection.
That's going to do it, guys. Just quick podcast. We will be back tomorrow night. And let us know exactly who you want in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube. And if you're listening on Spotify, go talk to us on Twitter. So. That'll be it, guys. Peace.